What's your act called? The Aristocats. In honor of falling in love, what's the best pun movie title?
I'm Katie Rich, and the answer is Face Off. This is not a question.
I'm Matt Patches. Just to emphasize, falling in love, that's in with two N's. That's why it's
are they honor. In and are they yes. in and in?
They're in and in. She runs an inn. This is a Netflix rom-com that's being dropped in the middle of Labor Day weekend, so no one watches it, but it's in.
Oh, no. Yes. That's how Netflix rom-coms gets watched by like 100 million people.
That's true. It's going to be they're going to tweet in like 2 weeks, right? And that it's been viewed by 500 billion people. Falling in love too. Come up with your own subtitle. I'm Matt Patches, and I'm going to go with The Santa Claus. Took me a very long time to understand that pun.
Isn't that how you learn what a... Sorry. That's how I learned what a clause was.
That's how you... That you went to law school after that. You're like, yes. I've been inspired.
Yeah.
Tim Allen is so informative. And I'm David the Seven, and I'm going to go with An American Tale, because some pun titles, especially ones before you can read, are very confusing later on in life.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good, then. Well, then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine, then, and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Fighting in the War Room. It's episode 271, and it's the week of August 28th, 2019. This week, it's a slow news week, but on this week in 1963, Martin Luther King gave the I Have a Dream speech.
Yeah. But this week, Eva Longoria landed the job to direct Flamin' Hot, the biopic of the creator of Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
So,
Move over, Martin Luther King.
Truly a day that will go down in history.
There's new history being made.
We are here. David is on a flight to Venice as we speak, and it may as well because we don't have any reviews. I guess everyone was too bummed about David leaving for a week to leave us a review.
It's the dog days of summer. We understand. But when people get back from vacation, they got to leave reviews.
Watch Falling in Love.
If you're one of our, you know, listeners who catches up every week, I will say that last week I caught that I'm occasionally using verse when I mean verses. And I'm going to amend myself.
People got very mad about that. I don't think you're in the wrong, but where do you think you picked that up? I feel like that's, I don't know, that's like a child of the 2000s thing. No, you're not.
I mean, I do remember the last time a V or a versus like fucked with my shit, which was having to train myself to say Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. And then it became a joke that in order to train myself, everything was this blank v blank. And I think I'm probably like pushing through the trauma and just getting the verse.
Your brain's been broken ever since.
Exactly.
But it's probably something you picked up when you were younger, and yet, what was the versus content of your youth?
No, it's not something I'd pick. That's not how my brain works. What's more likely is that my mind is writing it out or I'm saying something. So versus is BS and it's easier for my brain to communicate to my hand.
And I was going to say, like, is from being online all the time and doing most of your communication through like written text and all of a sudden you realize you haven't been like saying it correctly in your head.
I mean, a lot of it's that, or especially like podcasting, I've learned that like when I'm writing, I'm talking to myself in sentences and clauses, and that kind of just goes to my hands. So I learn how to say things as I would write them, which is sometimes incorrectly.
Do you ever walk around your room pacing, talking into your phone to like automate the words onto like a note app? Classic.
No, it's faster if I write. Java like makes fun of how I say like creme fraiche, but it's because I need to spell creme fraiche different, you know, from like creme fraiche or whatever. I say it with an accent. That's how it helps me spell it.
Creme fraiche. I just published a piece on Polygon from Dave going deep on Emperor Palpatine. Did not use the phrase creme fraiche, and I'm a little disappointed now.
It was amongst the cut words that was cut for legends and non-continuity purposes. The creme fraiche wars.
That's how I say it in Star Wars.
We haven't even gotten to the part of this show where we're going to be talking about Star Wars lore, and I'm already confused. That's not a good sign.
I should dial it back.
Leave a review. Don't let this weird digression fool you. Leave us a review. convinced Dave this week to talk about Righteous Gemstone, since it's one of the few new shows, other than the one we'll be talking about in the mini segment, that I've been catching up on lately, mostly because Michael, my husband, who barely watches any TV with me, actually wanted to watch it, which I found intriguing. We didn't watch Vice Principals. We didn't watch Eastbound and Down. Really? But I think the John Goodman of it caught his attention, which is funny because in the first two episodes, John Goodman is a very minor figure. And the first two episodes is what I have watched so far. Dave, have you watched more of it?
No, I've only watched the first two episodes, but okay. I did see the first episode like earlier this year and tried to convey it to you guys in the G-chat that it was something interesting to keep an eye out for, but that was a long time ago.
But wait, I think it's a serious flag to throw here that Katie, your husband, who is very picky, or maybe not picky, but like discerning in what he actually wants to watch, having not watched Eastbound Down, Danny McBride's really popular HBO comedy, which having worked at Esquire and having worked at Thrillist, all of these places, if you put Eastbound and Down out there in the world, people want to read about Eastbound and Down. I think it really connected with a large chunk of American population. That show resonated and spoofed the right type of Southern attitude while still breaching the bubble of elitist Northeasterners or whatever. That show is really popular, but your husband not into that, and he didn't watch, and not a lot of people watched
it. I don't know if he wasn't not into it. I don't know. I don't think either of us ever watched it at all.
Okay, I don't want to. Yeah, I don't want to speak for him, but that's not. You're not connecting the Eastbound and Down to him, and he didn't watch Vice Principals. Like many people didn't watch Vice Principals, but somehow the Righteous Gemstones was like on his radar when it premiered kind of out of the blue this month.
I don't know.
Why?
I haven't been able to figure it out. I think John Goodman got his attention. We were looking for something to watch because it was too hot to sit on the porch. Anyway, I mean, Righteous Gemstones is definitely parodying a more niche version of Southern culture. Like, it's about prosperity gospel preachers and, you know, people who seem a little bit based on Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, who are from South Carolina, which is where I'm from and where this show is filmed. And I believe it's set in South Carolina as well, which is interesting because not very much is. So if you grew up in a mega church or you like grew up around people who went to mega churches, some of it will feel familiar. But I grew up around people who went to mega churches, really? But not quite to this extent. Yeah, wait,
there were mega churches near where you grew up?
Yeah, there's a big old Millbrook Baptist church. It was this enormous church. I mean, it's not as insane as the one, like, the, you know, they filmed the show in a convention center, so it's not as over the top, but I mean, I think most southern cities of any size have some kind of mega church. I don't know, maybe you're thinking of a mega church as something different than I am.
No, that's exactly what I'm thinking of a mega church as. I guess I don't know where mega churches are or how
Colorado has a lot of mega churches.
They are.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, like if you go to every town, you think there's a mega church, or like within 5 miles of every major southern city, you think there's a mega church. I'm definitely coming at this from a Philadelphia resident who is totally. I don't get it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of churches. There are a lot of big churches. And what Colorado Springs is where, like, it's like a huge religious hub in Colorado, right, Dave?
The super, super mega churches, yeah. With the,
which
like,
mega church do you go to? The Sith Lords?
Well, I mean, it's not so much, like, it is like a very specific Lansing of, like, the mega church, you know, a bunch of characters who run one of these southern mega churches. But that being said, I don't think it hasn't yet gotten specific enough to be something that I think you have to have had experience with in order to enjoy. Like, if you have a picture, if you've seen, what was the crazy documentary about the Jesus Camp? If you've, like, seen Jesus Camp, you know, sometimes that, Christianity can get stretched to these weird extremes, these weird dramatic extremes. And then if you paid attention to, you know, very real news throughout like the late 80s and the 90s, you've seen televangelists sort of rise and fall in the public eye. So these are who the characters are when we pick them up at the beginning of the series. But I think what makes it great and what separates it a little bit from Eastbound and Down, at least so far, is I think it has a lot more directorially on its mind in terms of like, the first scene of the series takes place like this mass baptism that they're doing at a pool in some Asian country.
In China.
And in China, and you know, doing playing with the way that it's a wave pool, and like at towards the end of the scene, the wave pool comes on, but playing with the way that it's like lit in purples and blues is a little bit more ambitious than, you know, your Eastbound and Down. And then in the second episode, when it's sort of revealed that we're going to see the other perspective of a big dramatic turning event in the first episode, I think the series reveals that it's going to be a bit smarter than you assumed it could be. It could just be, let's look at these ridiculous characters and watch them, you know, sleazily run this mega church. But it appears like the series could have a more sharp satire about other types of people on its mind, which shows a lot of potential, I think.
Yeah, I think having the kind of that Coen Brothers quality of like everyone involved in this having kind of their own idiocy and weird foibles that it wants to satirize is kind of essential to it. Because like I was saying, like the hypocrisy of a Southern megachurch, it's like something that people have been talking about for a long time. Like there are jokes to be made about it. And I also think you kind of like the characters are not super nuanced to the point that you can dive into that a lot, and it might get to that point eventually. And that's one of the things that, like, I think is a hallmark of the Eastbound and Down, Jody Hill, Danny McBride universe, is that the characters are pretty broad. And I found like a lot of the jokes landed as a result of that, and many of them didn't. But it's it spreads its focus. And in the second episode, you get this character. Oh God, I have to look up his name, but this guy is in Booksmart as kind of the goofball guy who like rents a yacht for his party and like shows up throughout the night and eventually becomes really sympathetic. And he's a really interesting character to throw into it. And I'm curious to see how he might grow and, you know, kind of make the breadth of the show a bit wider. I've almost got his name.
That tosses his girlfriend, Stevie or Devil or whatever.
What's that?
The guy from Booksmart?
Yeah.
Isn't he the guy that like, I think his name's Stevie.
Jared.
Oh, he's Jared.
Yeah,
yes,
his name's
right.
Skylar Gisondo.
There you go.
He's like the goofy, redheaded, freckly kid. He's really good in it. Batches.
I was going to jump on something you said it was Coen-y.
An overstatement. I would not call the style of the show Coen Brothers-y, but I think the way that it is like an enveloping scheme and kind of getting into the characters who are involved in either side of it feels Coen-y.
I think it's in terms of like Eastbound and Down, which was very much, you know, focused on Danny McBride's character, and then, you know, Vice Principals, which is obviously like basically a two-hander. This one, it looks like its cast can expand to include more wackos. Before it has to like stop and do like a character study.
Yeah.
Potentially.
I guess what I wanted to cling to there was, how do you think that Danny McBride and Jody Hill's comedies have defined themselves outside of that scope, perhaps? Or like, so much of what we see today seems Coen-y to me, or Coen imitation, from Fargo, which is a direct imitation of what the Coens have done, to maybe even like Breaking Bad, I think is Coen-y on some level, just trying to find that like weird characters in the middle of nowhere. Break Bad, essentially. That's a lot of what the Coens have done. And Righteous Gemstones have definitely come off that way. Eastbound and Down and Vice Principals seem that similar. I'm just wondering, like, what feels Coen-y? Why has prestige television in the past few years clung to this idea? And maybe Jody Hill and Danny McBride are not like that. Maybe they're really doing their own thing. I don't know if you ever saw what is the movie that they did,
the Foot Fist Way?
I mean, it definitely has its own cadence that doesn't feel Coen Brothers-y to me. It feels almost like Tim and Eric does mockumentary or something. It feels really like a departure, but I'm wondering what you
is
think.
Is that movie a mockumentary? Coen-y. I've seen it, but it's been so long.
It has been a really long time, and I don't know, but it feels like The Office-esque. Even if it's not mockumentary, it feels like it's very close to that,
I think,
and how it's depicting the action. But I don't know why that feels Coen-y. I don't know what the Coens have done that has kind of lured us all into describing everything that's kind of like kind of funny, kind of dramatic as Coen-y. And if something is really Coen-y, or if it's its own thing.
I would say this is its own thing, because it's they never start you in a series or anything with a like introduction, like a full introduction to a character. You're not, you don't get like a first season of The Office to like build up Michael Scott, or you don't get a, you know, first season slow burn of Walter White to build up Breaking Bad. What you get is you get on full display in their worst behavior and some of their most dramatic moments. You get dropped right into these essentially normal people, and normal means they're going to be horrible. And all the series thus far, and I'm sure The Righteous Gemstones is going to also make that journey, is by the end, you actually care for them like you would care for other, I think, heroes of a TV show. I think the thing that makes this feel, I think, a little bit more Coen-y instead of that, which I would describe maybe as like a Jody Hill trait, is this one sort of feels like a scheme gone wrong, and both sides are trying to get to an end of the situation, and that's just going to embroil them deeper in the scheme. And that does.
And no one seems smart enough to actually have the scheme under control.
Right, right. There's not a big bag of money yet, but there very quickly could be a big bag.
No, there is a big bag of money. I mean,
oh, there is a big bag of money,
but it's not
the MacGuffin big bag of
money. Yeah, but there, in the first episode, there is a literal big bag of money.
Yes.
Fair enough.
So I would say, I don't know. I would give it a try, Patches, because I think it has the stuff that from those previous series. Yeah, I don't know if you liked Eastbound and Down and Vice Principals, but you talked about them.
I love them.
But I think it, especially Danny McBride directed the first episode, David Gordon Green directed the second episode. I think it could aspire to be more visually interesting and maybe have something on its mind there.
Yeah, we spoke to Danny McBride at Polygon, and I was really captivated by his answers about what he wants to do with the show, which is like go a little deeper, or like this should be more of a drama than either two. I think that he sees this as like a deeper story, a longer story. He certainly is a cinema minded person. All these guys went to film school together, and
right down the road from me in Greensboro, right. North Carolina.
And
oh, it's Katie the Salem,
obviously
sorry.
Absorbed a lot of that information. She's yes. an auteur. Mm-hmm. If you want to explore that. No, I'm interested to see if this could potentially grow into something that is like a real show. I feel like Eastbound Down is a great quote board. Like a certain type of bro probably puts Kenny Powers on their dorm room wall, and Vice Principals went like is not part of the culture conversation at all, even though it's like a little movie in TV form. I'm hoping this maybe could grow into something, and you know better, like if it's like a real series, if it goes a few seasons long, and if it tells a deep story and is colossally fucked up and really funny, but says something about religion in the modern day and these megachurch. I don't know what it's going to say. You know, it seems like a megachurch is easy to lampoon, but maybe Danny McBride clearly thinks that this could run deep, and I'm interested in that.
Yeah.
I also think Skylar Gazando, I hope he's in the show a lot because he rules. I don't know if either of you watched Santa Clarita Diet. I have not seen Booksmart yet, but I have seen Santa Clarita Diet, and he is a revelation.
Huh.
This kid is amazing. And if you never watched Santa Clarita, it is 3 seasons long, got canceled by Netflix at the 3 season mark, as everything will. It's awesome. And he's fantastic. He was in the Vacation movie with Ed Helms. Jesus, don't watch that, but do watch Santa Clarita Diet. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's really good in the Vacation movie. I put that together after I saw him in Righteous Gemstones.
Okay, for our mini segment, we are going to talk about another HBO show. I mean,
woo!
I don't know what it says. You know, we talked a little about the whole summer in our last episode, reflecting on all the movies. I feel like this summer we've talked a lot about HBO, which is interesting because we're kind of like gearing up for the streaming wars, and, you know, Netflix is out there. The strategy is well known. Disney Plus is going to launch. HBO Max is going to launch. Everyone is, you know, hoarding IP and hoarding their properties that hopefully will lure people in. So I think it's interesting that we've talked a lot about HBO this summer with Euphoria, even if some of us liked it, some of us didn't. We talked about Righteous Gemstones just now. Now we're going to talk about Succession, a show that seems to have just blown up after its first season, which kind of like a slow burn, I would say. But when it came back for season two about 2 weeks ago, everyone I know was talking about the show, and I came back and watched the first episode, and I just find myself like really not wanting to watch it.
You watched the first episode of the second season without having watched any of the first season.
No, right? I watched the whole first season.
Oh,
okay.
The whole
first season. So spoiler alert, you know, horrific things happen at the end of the first season. We're not going to describe the plot of Succession. If you're in, you're in. If you're out, jump ahead 3 minutes and you'll get past this thing. But like, Succession is happening. It's taking the at least media elite by storm. I feel like this is a Mad Men situation where everyone in our circles loves the show. It seems to be getting good ratings, but like when you're doing an episode about digital media, of course everybody in the press is going to lose their minds for Succession.
I'm but certain like, that was a strategy on their behalf. It was a smart one.
It seems to be working. Walter not doing well in the clicks. But I find myself really struggling to watch season one or season two and just getting excited to like tune in to the depressing, carnivorous drama of Succession, you know, that's emulating the kind of Fox-esque media family and the inner turmoil, the Game of Thrones-esque backstabbing that happens when you are making billions of dollars and you want to be the one on the top. But Katie, you love Succession. I'm not asking to be convinced, but I am asking what's happening here and why the drama is sustained for you or why it's entertaining. It's hilarious, but it's also disgusting and it's somehow captivating to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think the asking if the drama is working for me is not the point. It's the satire and the comedy that like keeps me coming back to it. They've created these really indelible characters who have all of these zingers they throw at each other. The creator, Jesse Armstrong, is of the Armando Iannucci, you know, Veep school of rich people insulting each other, which has been a vein of comedy for like 10 years now, which has been wonderful. And there is drama that I care about, like the relationships between these siblings. Like I have a weird affection for a lot of them, particularly Kendall, who's like in the first season, he's kind of ostensibly the lead. What's been interesting about this season is kind of shifting him out of the center and making it more about Shiv, who's the only sister in the family, who is maybe an even worse person. They're all terrible people. And what I think is satisfying about it is kind of watching their level of misery. You get to see inside their incredibly rich lives and realize that like money can't buy you happiness, but it's not like they're sad rich people. They're just like squabbling, scrambling rich people who are really funny to listen to. The people around them are funny. Like J. Smith Cameron plays Jerry, who's like the lawyer for the family, and she gets off some of the best lines. They're adding to the cast this season. Like Holly Hunter is going to show up in the next episode, I think, as part of the family. This kind of like New York Times-esque Salzburger family that they're trying to take over. The amount of talent that they're getting and the way that they're building up their roster is so impressive. It feels like the interesting place to be if you're an actor in New York right now. Cherry Jones is going to be on it too, Patches.
I do love Cherry Jones. Yeah, it seems like a very New York theater actor.
Oh, show, yeah.
That's your jam.
I mean, they had J. Smith Cameron on in the first season, but it's like Jeannie Berlin's on this season. Like, it only keeps ramping up and up.
Yeah, it's not that I, you know, a few episodes ago we were talking about subjecting ourselves to terrible feelings in movies and television. I do think that's necessary. I wouldn't persuade someone to watch or not watch Succession because it makes you feel bad. I don't know. I really was into season one, and there's something about season two, and maybe it's the way that the
characters... Wait, I thought you weren't sold by season one.
No, I got in. I mean, I watched it all. I feel like I wouldn't watch it all unless I was kind of into it.
It sounds like you were maybe waiting for the part that would sell you and then got to the end.
I think all of season one was kind of lead up to like, what is going to be the big question here? What's the big hook of the show? And I kept sticking with season one, waiting for it to happen. And it never really happened.
No, that's not the show that it is.
Right. In this end of season one, Kendall gets a horrible car crash and murders an innocent civilian. And then it's all covered up. And then in season two, you pick up and Kendall is just this void of a human being shaped by Brian Cox's Logan, the patriarch of this family, and it's like, oh, we're just going to keep going forward. I still don't know, a season and an episode in, like, what is the point of the show? Where is it all going?
It's about Succession. What the fuck are you talking about? In the first episode, he's like, I'm not stepping down. And now it's like Game of Thrones, but it takes itself way less seriously, which is what's so satisfying about it. Like Game of Thrones, as much as I thought the ending kind of got unfairly destroyed, like the self-seriousness of it and the high drama of it really was exhausting after a while. And I think I talked about Fleabag as a corrective to that. And this also feels like a very different kind of corrective.
But to wrap up our mini segment here, what do you cling to with Succession? What feels like it's whisking you along on the ride? Like, next episode is coming around the corner. What can't you wait to see with Succession?
Holly Hunter and Cherry Jones.
Okay, that's not fair.
Okay.
Those are new people and Holly Hunter rules.
It's how the characters interact with each other. I think they've set up this roster of characters who any combination of them in a scene is going to be interesting. They're going to have interesting friction with each other. It's not so much the plot of like, I don't really care who's going to take over the company. I care about how they're going to talk to each other and treat each other in the meantime.
At least Alan Ruck is great.
Alan Ruck is like watching also, the West Wing. He's like, oh, they're never going to find peace in the Middle East. What is this show even about?
But also, Alan Ruck's character is going to become president, so you can look forward to that.
Oh, yeah. That's...
Alan Ruck, 2020.
Parents, are you guys subscribing to Disney Plus this November?
Do I literally have a choice?
You do have a choice.
It's true. I checked Toy Story out of the library, so I could just do that.
Yeah. You won't be able to buy all the Disney movies. Short films, but you will be able to rent Toy Story on iTunes or whatever.
Wait, isn't Toy Story going to be on Disney Plus? Didn't they say all Pixar is going to be on there?
No, all the Pixar movies are going to be on Disney Plus, but if you want to get the exclusive Forky short form films after Toy Story 4, you're gonna have to subscribe to Disney Plus. Hey, what are we talking about here?
We're talking about D23 this past weekend in California.
I didn't get to do my sound off here.
All right, do it.
D23. Was that 23 D's?
I was like,
hated that.
Oh, like part of the way through, I'm like, he lost count. He's just going to keep going.
I was
going
to use my fingers, but I realized Dave could see me and I would be.
Oh, yeah. That's what you're worried about? This is for an audio podcast where people can rewind and count all of them.
Well,
and they will.
Canonically, how many D's did I say for the history?
You definitely said 23.
We could pretend.
We're talking about that 23. It happened this weekend. Wait.
Dave was going to set it up.
Why is it called D23?
Oh, I actually don't remember the answer to this. It used to be the name of a very exclusive like section of the Disney fan club.
Well, it still is. It's a magazine. It's 23.
1923 is the year that Walt Disney founded the company.
Okay, thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Google.
Yeah, Google. Fun.
Expo in Anaheim went down this past weekend. It is a celebration of all things Disney, which is interesting in 2019 because I feel like a few years ago, a celebration of all things Disney would be a completely different experience. And I think if you are following conversation in the parks lovers world, there are many, 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 many adults who love Disney parks. I'm not one of them, but, I know a lot of people who constantly go to Disney World and Disneyland.
I don't get to go. I just follow news. And
I like the news.
Videos
the news is interesting. Yeah, no, the news is interesting. But people who love Disney love that certain Disney magic. It's not just Mickey. It's the kind of manufactured magic of these parks, but the legacy of the company and going all the way back to 1923. Everything that Disney has done, the animation, the magic. And now we have a new Disney, right? This conglomerate, it has Marvel, has Lucasfilm.
Same Disney.
Pixar. But no,
same Disney hired Wernher von Braun to pitch a space program, even though he's a Nazi. It's the same Disney.
It's a different, it's a different Disney in terms of the ambitions, the goals, whatever. If you can't regard the Disney of like Walt Disney wanting to start Epcot and put people in pods and like whisk them away and gondolas or whatever to the park. Totally different, futuristic, idealistic, just, you know, utopian Disney. This is a Disney of conglomerates. It's Lucasfilm, it's Star Wars, it's Nat Geo, it's 20th Century Fox, it's IP land. And I think after this D23, it's particularly interesting. It's like, this is all about IP. Every panel is going to be about what Marvel and Star Wars and all these different things are bringing to the table to these different platforms. Whereas, and even part, when they talk about parks, when they talk about cruise lines, when they talk about the entire Disney package, Disney is this monolith that we're all living with right now. It's unavoidable. It feels so just, it's looming over. We're all living in the shadow of Disney. So when D23 happens, when all these people congregate to kind of bow at the altar of this IP, totally different thing now than it was before. But I'm also obsessed with it. Like, we still love a lot of what this stuff, this Disney corporation is putting forward. And I wonder what you all make of 3 days of hardcore Disney appreciation, Disney news. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. Katie, you were like totally both in deep working this weekend on Disney stuff. But like, does any of this resonate with you? Does any of this transcend? Is what Disney's putting forward going to be good for the culture?
Oh,
good
Jesus
for our entertainment?
Oh,
well, Galaxy Brain!
I mean, yes and no. I mean, I think I feel like we've had versions of this conversation all summer, partly because Disney is like so much of entertainment at this point. But part of how Disney has managed to conquer so much stuff and kind of set the template of what superhero movies are and animated movies and all this other stuff is because they're making a lot of good stuff. It's not always challenging. It's not always the most interesting version of what you imagine something could be. But I think it was, I don't know if it was on the podcast or not, when you guys told me the concept of what if is. And I was like, oh, that sounds cool. And I would like to watch that, please. I'm less interested in the Lady and the Tramp Disney Plus series, but I'm interested in the Mandalorian. Like, the whole like streaming future and everyone having an individual streaming service is going to kind of suck, I think. And I think everyone's realizing that. But right now, Disney Plus is making a pretty unimpeachable argument for me to subscribe to it. I don't know if the me who didn't have kids and didn't work in entertainment would feel compelled by it, but it's interesting that they are promoting The Mandalorian and Lady and the Tramp and What If and Nat Geo's free solo being on the service and Fox Searchlight films. Like, their ability to conquer the world means that they're going to offer this service that really does have something for almost everybody. It's not just IP and animated films all the way down, which is, I don't know, that's some sign of hope, right?
I mean, Lizzie McGuire is coming back.
Yeah, fuck that. I don't care about that at all.
I'm
too old a
patches?
Millennial.
I'm not mad. I'm lost. I'm really lost because
I mean, I know it feels like it should be wrong because corporations shouldn't grow to this size, but it is the natural, this is the arc of a successful corporation.
Well, like, wait, do you not think that government regulation maybe should have to step in at some point and not let some corporation own all of this?
I mean, I definitely think that that's should be on the discussion table.
It just feels like a very
1920s style Tommy Gunn.
Dave saying that capitalism inevitably taking its course and doing this feels like a very un-Dave take.
No, I mean, I don't have to agree with it to see that that's obviously what's going on.
Sure,
it's like we don't have laws that automatically kick in. You have to start an anti-monopoly, you know, investigation and whatnot. It's not like, oh man, Spider-Man and Captain America are too close together.
they trigger an automatic Supreme Court.
Just, yeah, it's like, listen up, guys. So that being said, what you have is you have something that created a fandom and a nostalgia off of animated things and did it up through the 1960s. Pretty consistently. And then it went away for a little while as the rest of America decided what a super corporation would be. And then as soon as it came back, it was, you know, ready to go on the Eisner journey and become what it is right now, which is essentially they took the people that were super fanatics about Disney and they looked over there and they're like, oh, those Muppet fanatic people, they're kind of like us and they're close enough to us that why not? Why don't we just buy that? And then these Pixar people, they're like making movies for us already. People already think that Pixar is basically Disney. Let's just buy that. And, you know, it becomes a lucrative enough property of playing the correct gambles that you get to buy up all the successful entertainment. The nice thing about that is those like sub things that you buy up suddenly have the freedom of a gigantic corporation with tons of money that isn't going to tolerate failure, but that also has four other potential billion-dollar movies coming out your year. So why not let them fuck around with the IP? I think it's been a very exciting time period to see Disney operate as an entertainment company and take something like Star Wars, which George Lucas himself could not fully resuscitate back to like its original luster, and create something like the sequel series, or to become the second web platform in all of history to have all of the Simpsons episodes. Like, all those things seem like...
Wait, you just said that like it was like a colossal achievement. I mean, okay.
Congrats to Disney.
The second web platform in history. But the fact that it's both, Dave, I think is maybe your point, that like it's going to have all of the Simpsons and all the rest of the shit.
Exactly. And I mean, having all of the something is the benefit of the web platform, as we've discussed before, especially with Disney, who used to have this whole vaulting business mechanism to try to buy more. Now it's just, no, you got to buy into the full stream.
Is it really the end of the Disney vault? I'm sorry, you're jumping into something else, but I was totally expecting them to be like, well, we'll have Pixar movies until now, so you better subscribe. But like, does the whole vault process not work with streaming anymore?
At least for right now, the plan is not vaulting, and it's trying to bring you in with those extra contents that your Marvel series or your Forky shorts or your Ladies and the Tramp. But from what I understand, the majority of the full collection, with, you know, other pre-censored exceptions, Song of the South, the Michael Jackson Simpsons episode, will all be available.
Well, not every Marvel movie will be available. There's only a handful of Marvel movies that will be
interesting
on the platform. Part of that has to do with Paramount, I believe.
Yeah, there's some licensing.
Oh, like, so the first everything before the Avengers, right?
Yeah, and I don't think it's totally clear because it's never been officially announced, like, which Disney movies will be on the platform. I think we assume that everything from classic Disney animation will be there, but like, will
I think
the Black Cauldron be there? I don't know.
The wording they've been used is eventually the entire Disney vault will be there. But I do think it is the end of vaulting. I don't expect like a rollout. If they were to roll out with the entire Disney lineup, Patches is right, we would have heard that this weekend. That would have been like all they were talking about. So it might be some sort of like weird leveling, but I do expect it to all be there because they have stream ready, you know, restorations and files of all these things already, and why not?
Yeah, I want and we've definitely talked about this, all the like old like 60s live action Disney movies that my dad watched when he was a kid and I watched, that I feel like they're never going to have on there, but I would watch. Like Shaggy Dog.
Donald in Math Magic Land. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Just give me
the
pool.
The second time I'm going to bring up Wernher von Braun. Anyway,
do you guys want to talk about non-Disney Plus stuff from D23?
Well, I wanted to ask at large if there's anything from this, because it's so insular and because we talk about this stuff all the time and we can't escape it because it's so colossal, because it's so influential, because we're into it. What from D23 broke out to you? Is there anything interesting that's happened? I mean, obviously there's going to be Star Wars and Marvel and Disney animation news, but is there anything that resonated with you out of these announcements?
Soul sounds interesting.
Whack as hell.
Yeah.
Soul sounds what?
It sounds whack as hell. I mean, it's insane. It's about a man.
Oh, I thought
dying.
You said black as hell, and I was going to be like, ew.
But like, when you say whack, that sounds like you think it's bad.
I don't think it's bad. I just think it could be. I think it's going to be. It's interesting. It sounds a lot like Inside Out. I didn't say it's black as hell, but it is black as hell because it's actually Jamie Foxx. It sounds great. I mean, right. I like, it has a black co-director. This is a huge step for Pixar. They are not a diverse company whatsoever, and they're clearly trying with Soul. Majority black cast. It's admirable. I think it sounds a little weird on its surface, just like, oh, it's about a jazz musician. Okay.
That's what I like about it. Okay, because yeah. that's what you want from Pixar. You want the pitch that's like, how is this even a movie? Because
yeah.
Pixar true. Is the studio no, that makes that work.
And having... Inside Out was questionable too, but like this sounds actually a little too much like Inside Out, but I've seen the concept
it
art.
It sounds more, isn't it more like Coco? Like, isn't it kind of like a journey through a like land of spirits or something?
Yeah, so the premise is basically there's a place in the afterlife where souls are created and trained, and when you die, you go there and become a soul, and Jamie Foxx and Tina Fey play two souls, making it in the great beyond, ready to like come back to Earth and figure out how to be good again. I'm sure the theme is exactly the same as every other Pixar movie, but
Having been rewatching Inside Out recently and watched Coco on a long loop or before that, when Pixar goes weird, I mean their stuff is unbelievable. Inside Out is so good.
Yeah, I mean it looks like a major stretch of the imagination compared to something like Onward, the first Pixar movie of 2020, which is about like two elf kids resurrecting their dead father. and looks pretty basic.
I mean, I'm psyched for the Forky shorts too, to be clear.
That's where I think, I mean, if Disney Plus plays with their formats, Disney has a long tradition of doing short form stuff for Disney Channel and for classic Disney like ABC stuff, and I would love, and I think about this all the time with Netflix, and Netflix is starting to do this too, just playing with format, playing with time. We talked a little about David Harbour's really insane sounding Frankenstein short, like 22 minute one-off. That's where streaming could just be so much better, and obviously cost money to do a one-off. You can't, you know, it's a short movie. What does it really attract an audience? I don't know, but that's where we have so much freedom. I wonder if these streaming platforms could be a little more like embracing the web series in a way. I don't know if Disney Plus could ever do that because it's so corporate and it's dealing with such big IP. Everything else, even mildly dangerous, I think is going to go to Hulu, which I don't think they talked a lot about Hulu at D23, did they?
Well, it seems like Hulu is going to be just like a default for all the stuff that they own that they don't feel like has a home on Disney Plus.
Yeah, it's Fox.
I don't think they're going to be making new stuff for Hulu.
They are.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, like The Handmaid's Tale.
There's Marvel. There's a Marvel original animated series coming to Hulu.
So, is there? Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like a Howard the Duck series, a MODOK series. Yeah, it's
mature animation.
The most revealing thing is like all my friends who are, you know, not entertainment people, but all my not entertainment people friends, my real Colorado in real life friends were texting on a group thread about all the D23 stuff and like Disney Plus, and they were like, oh man, we tried to get out of bundles and now we're like in a couple of years we're going to be buying bundles, like in a couple of years. And I just linked to the Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, Hulu bundle that is going to exist at the end of this year, and we're back. We're back to cable bundles. Thanks to the wonderful, you know, gifts of capitalism and monopolies.
Do you guys still have cable? Dave, I doubt you do.
Absolutely not.
No.
I do.
I haven't had it for a long time.
I gotta get rid of cable. I feel like this is really what's gonna do. It's still live sports that's the hard part, and ESPN doesn't totally
fix that.
I thought
Hulu does that. ESPN Plus will not do that for you?
Not all. It's college sports. That's the problem. Like, there's stuff that just only airs on, like, specific niche networks that just come bundled into your cable package. And I imagine cable companies are going to cling to those for dear life.
Yeah, there's also, like, Sling and other app-based things you could probably do to do a mix and match and actually get rid of the cord if you wanted to.
We could probably, I mean, we definitely should, like, subscribing to Disney Plus and then probably Apple TV Plus whenever that shows up. It's going
to
get really
have
expensive.
To do that one. I'm going to throw that out there.
I'm
if
just
you're a
gonna,
CBS lover, then maybe Apple TV Plus is for you. But Jesus, no,
you don't.
I'm just going to hope that they give me a press login or something.
Okay, Katie, here's the big question. How excited are you for WandaVision?
That sounds fun. I don't know. Like, when you talk about, like, them doing the, like, history of web series and stuff, that's weird. Like, I know that that's all, like, IP that has to fit into the Marvel universe, but it also seems fun and weird. And, like, what people like about comic books is that they get fun and weird.
Yeah. WandaVision is the kind of thing that makes me super depressed for movies because it's clear that, like, the era of doing mid-sized Marvel movies, like, the original Captain America or something, or like their first Thor movie. I feel like that.
But those were not
completely over.
That was not like we're going to make a mid-sized movie as opposed to the big ones. That was like we're making these cheap because we don't know if they're going to make any money. That's a different strategy.
I don't know. I mean, they're grounded. They're origin stories, so maybe they have to do that. But certainly, Eternals or whatever that they presented at the regular Disney showcase, that's going to be a big movie. And all future sequels will be. I feel like all of Marvel temples after Black Widow, which is going to be kind of a smaller scale movie as they turn the wheels there. Everything's going to be so huge because Disney Plus is now going to be the place where, like, here are the stories that are too niche or too intricate to tell, like very specific. And WandaVision, Katie, you really need to go and read Tom King's run on Vision. It's a comic book. It's going to blow your mind. Trust me. Pick up the paperback. Dave, have you read Vision?
I haven't read Vision.
Pick up Vision, Dave. Tom King's Vision is this out of control suburban nightmare starring Vision. Now, Katie, you know who Vision is.
Heard of him.
He's a robot. He was created by which stone, Dave?
The Mind Stone.
The Vision, Tom King's book is very comparable to like Watchmen. If you are not a reader of comic books listening to this and you're thinking about this book, it's very much like inverting superhero comics in that Watchmen vein. It's about Vision trying to have a home life. He has a wife. He has two kids. It's out of control. It's like Dick Van Dyke, kind of suburban nightmare implosion. WandaVision's going to go there. It's going to take House of M. It's going to merge with Tom King's Vision. It's going to be out of control show that somehow lines up with Doctor Strange and the multiverse. Like, it's going to be time travel. It's going to be cross-dimensional. It just sounds out of control. Somehow Darcy from Thor shows up, Dave. What?
Catherine Hahn is the nosy neighbor. That part sounds great.
Yeah, it's going to be extremely Bewitched. She's going to be what's Mrs. Kravitz from Bewitched all over again. It's going to be awesome. But like, that would never be a movie.
No.
And the fact that it exists on Disney Plus is almost extreme. It sounds like it has to be really pretty mature.
I'm not sure what era of movies you're mourning for something like this. Like, this sounds like exactly the kind of thing that's been perfect for television, like, since cable existed.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm mourning. It's crazy to think about, but I'm already mourning mid-2000s to late-2000s blockbuster features.
Boom. Let me sum up like the past
Tron
18
Legacy?
Minutes for you.
What are we talking about?
Passions is like, I'm going to say D a whole bunch of times, and I'm going to tell you this thing that I'm mad about, and then I'm going to go back and tell you all the things I love about this thing I'm mad about.
I'm not mad. I'm just really conflicted. I feel lots of feelings.
What's the conflicted part of you? The part that I'm hearing is, isn't it great they figured out a way to tell these more interesting niche stories with large IPs that used to just make the Bourne Supremacy over and over again?
I mean, we also get Treadstone on USA. I'm not conflicted. I'm just like, I wish that the movies could be complicated. I wish that there were feature versions of these certain things. I want to watch like Little Children with Vision.
But like, you probably will. Like, if Disney Plus continues in this vein, like, they're going to get there.
Of course. That's what this show basically is.
WandaVision might be that for all we know.
I want to watch that on the big screen sometimes. That's what I'm saying.
Like, as much as I think that Disney is imperiling the potential of weird and interesting movies, I think it is only heightening the potential of weird and interesting superhero stuff. Like, they're not going to be movies, but like, you're never going to get that on the big screen anyway. And what's in danger is all the mid-budget movies that aren't about superheroes that are not going to be made.
But now they get a place on Disney Plus too. I mean, they're making YA movies that would never, ever be made on Disney Plus.
That's not what I'm talking about. Actual Little Children, not like fucking Fault in Our Stars or whatever.
Maybe Criterion Channel will have original films eventually. Who knows? But Dave was going to pop off here about why Disney Plus is great. Or why all of Disney is great. We're not just talking about Disney Plus. here?
I mean, yes. Like I said at the top of the segment, it feels weird to have a convention where it's one company that's like showing you all these things that you're kind of into. But as somebody who's a fan of a lot of those IPs and has been some of them before they were even like owned by Disney or existed, then like, yeah, I it was a really fun weekend of a lot of like very exciting things. I think they pitched it in a really interesting way to show dominance and to peacock in front of Netflix, and I think it really fucking worked. And everything else was just meant to make the, you know, the normal consumer be like, hey, I want that. Oh, hey, I want that too. Oh, hey, Star Wars is coming out at the end of the year.
Seems can I end us on a Star Wars question?
Yeah, yes, go ahead.
Absolutely.
I know who Emperor Palpatine is.
Good.
I think he dies in the Return of the Jedi, right?
He does. Oh, yes.
You're really okay. Alley-ooping to polygon.com right now.
Why go should on, I be excited on. That Emperor Palpatine is back?
Is he back, Katie?
All is signs point to Emperor Palpatine being involved.
There is
in this
a horrible
movie.
D23 Star Wars poster that apparently with photographed a toy version of Emperor Palpatine. It is maybe the worst piece of Star Wars art I've ever seen in my entire life. That poster from D23 is horrible. Dave?
I'm Googling bad Star Wars or art right now to find some worse examples.
Make sure
why should you care, Katie, is because here we are wrapping up this sequel trilogy, and it's called Rise of Skywalker, and that means it's going to wrap up all 9 movies, and who's the baddest of bad of all 9 movies? It's that wrinkly guy.
Is he the baddest of bad? Like, does he feel like a satisfying bad guy to come back to at the end?
I think so, because he's fucking terrifying, but at least narratively, he, you know, in The Phantom Menace, takes over an entire galactic government and then creates a giant planet that blows up other planets. He's not very present, and then wasn't like part of George Lucas's original idea because he's not in the original Star Wars. So I see where you're coming from. But in this world that we live in, that what's now, what is it? We now have 8 movies instead of just 3. Palpatine's the villain in a lot of them.
Okay.
Yeah. Katie's a big fan of Ancient Order of the Wills or whatever. Guardians of the Wills. So she's disappointed by the.
What I feel fine legacy. In knowing that, like Emperor Palpatine will be part of the story, but I am more interested in Rey and what's those names, Oscar Isaac and all the rest of them. And that seems like it will continue to be an important part of the story and not just like, hey, this guy's back.
Oh, yeah. No, I think, hey, this guy's back is going to be like, I don't know, like the Yoda or whatever. It'll be super meaningful and important to the story, but I don't think you have to be like, why are we cutting away to this wrinkly old man?
Yeah.
At least I hope not.
Well, like, we just really got rid of Snoke, who was like kind of a boring bad guy, and then they got rid of him very cleverly in the second movie, and then let's just not go
back
to that.
How dare you besmirch the name of Snoke?
Are you enjoying the bad Star Wars fan art that I'm sending you right now?
Yes. You just sent me like Darth Maul hugging people and a really bad Darth Vader with one eye open.
To be clear,
I don't think these are official D23 posters.
No, they feel that way.
D23. Dave, are you going to go to Marvel Land?
Am I going to go to Marvel Land?
Are you kidding?
No. Am I kidding? What do you mean?
Wait, what? Isn't Dave going to go to Marvel Land? I thought that was...
Twist. Dave's not going to go to Marvel
Land. Dave's not going to go to Marvel Land?
Dave, why are you going to Marvel Land?
First of all, I have to, like, save up to go to the Harry Potter world. Second of all, I have to, like, save up to do this fucking ridiculous Star Trek hotel experience.
Star Wars.
Sorry.
Wow, that was a really...
I've already been to the Star Trek hotel experience, and it is great. Was great when it was still around. But yeah, the Star Wars hotel experience, which is, like, thousands of dollars a night to do this interactive hotel experience. And then, yeah, maybe...
And you
maybe
have
I'll
to. You're required to.
I'm a childless man in his mid-30s who, like, is probably already done all he's going to do. Yeah, I kind of have to go to the Star Wars hotel experience.
Wow, I Googled Avengers theme park and got an article by Matt Patches to tell me all about it.
Oh, awesome.
I'll probably go. Or if not, I'll at least watch people waiting in line and then all the rides on YouTube. I'm one of those weirdos. Anyway, D23, Disney, corporations coming for you.
Did it again.
Vote for someone who will tax them, maybe.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon. Drive carefully on your way home. Good night.
Yeah, folks, and me and my pals hope you had a swell time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mickey?
Uh-huh?
It's that time.
What time is that, Minnie?
Oh, Goofy?
Oh.
Now it's time to say goodnight. To all our company. M-I-C.
See you real soon.
So is Mickey Mouse.
K-E-Y.
Why?
Because we like you.
M-O-U-S-E.
And that does it for this week's show. We'll be back next week. David will be back from Venice, but on his way to Toronto, catch him while you can. And I'll be on my way to Toronto, too. It's going to be a big week. In the meantime, tell the people who you are.
I'm Matt Patches, senior editor at Polygon, not on my way to Toronto.
Thanks for asking.
I don't know where I'm going. I'm on Twitter at Mr. Patches. We have a website, fightingintheworm.com, where you can listen to episodes. You can share them with friends. I'm going to leave it there because you should really share them with friends.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. I spell my first name, D-A-7-E. That's also my Twitter handle. And you could find... Well, first of all, you should leave us a review on iTunes. We make David Ehrlich read them aloud. You probably noticed. And then you could hear my dulcet tones talking about the ABC series Lost on the Storm, a Lost rewatch podcast, which is coming up on a Katie Rich appearance sometime here in the future. So make sure to jump in and catch the Patches episode. Just start at the beginning, because I believe we're also beginning to have people from who worked on the actual show on as guests as we round out the end of the first season. Check it out, the Storm Lost Rewatch podcast.
I'm Katie Rich. I'm going to be on that podcast. I'm also at VanityFair.com and on the Little Gold Men podcast, where this week everyone's friend Joanna Robinson and I and some others are talking about The Goldfinch, is going to be a movie in a few weeks, and it's a very long book that we would like to talk to you about. You can also find me on Twitter at Katie Rich, K-A-T-E-Y-R-I-C-H, and we're all on Twitter at F-I-T-W-R, where you can talk to us about a lot of things, or you can answer this week's lightning round question, which was...
In honor of falling in love, what's the best pun movie title?
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back talking to you next week.
Bum-ba-dum, da-tum-pun-dun, a-pum-pun-dun, da-da-gum-gin, ba-bum-ba-bum-ba-bum, now I'm done, we're done.